Hello and welcome to What Is to Love It Tomorrow. I'm Dave.
And I'm Annie. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So this month, Dave's choice was, what is it, 1998? Tech noir, you discovered when you looked it up last night. Anyway, film called Dark City, which is very weird.
Okay.
Why did you pick it?
It's a good question. I mean, the last thing we did was Dirty Dancing, which was very contemporary and kind of upbeat and all very sort of bright and musical, and I thought I would pick something that was very much the opposite of that. It's very deep fantasy. It's obviously, as per the title, very dark. It's been on the list for a long time. I remember really enjoying it. That's basically why.
Okay.
And what were your thoughts?
Well, I think I might have seen it before. I'm not sure. Oh. I mean, as any listeners to the Reviews Revisited part of this podcast will know, my memory and my brain and my recollection of things is not very reliable. So, I don't know. Yes, it was dark, literally.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird. There was a bit in the middle that made me exclaim in disgust. But overall, sure. I mean, it had a very good cast. Yeah, did it hold up for you overall?
I mean, don't we ask that at the end?
How many times?
I mean, I still really enjoyed it.
Good.
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised by any of it, even though I hadn't seen it for quite a long time.
So you remembered it quite well.
I remembered it quite well.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about as non-realistic as you can get. I mean, even more so than something like, this is going to sound stupid, but even more so than something like Lord of the Rings. It's very artificial.
Yes.
But I still really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Brief plot synopsis for the listeners, for anybody
sure.
who does not know anything about this film.
So, Rufus Sewell wakes up naked in a bath in a hotel room with a dead prostitute and no memories. He is chased by weird men in trench coats and hats and discovers he has powers of shaping reality. It's eventually revealed that the whole city has been fabricated by aliens to try and find the human soul, something they lack. Rufus Sewell beats them at their own game and then transforms the city to make it a nicer place to live.
Yeah, pretty much, except you really don't get a feeling at all of what the film's like from that description.
It's weird.
Because the city that they're in, first of all, it's permanently night because
yes.
the aliens can't deal with daylight. But also, as they say at one point in the film, it's because they've completely artificially created this place, which later we find is essentially a giant city just floating in space.
Yeah.
They've picked different things from different time periods on Earth and kind of slapped it all together. And overall, it's kind of, I don't know, 40s noir is probably the closest
you can kind of get to aesthetic.
It. Yeah, so you're very much in a kind of 30s, 40s kind of aesthetic, except it's in terms of things like the architecture and
the cars
and the set dressings
and this kind of stuff.
But it and what people are wearing and even what people are doing as jobs and things.
Yeah.
But the overall thing is, it's dark.
Yeah.
One of the things that, I mean, I don't mean dark as in, you know, grim, because
physically dark. I had to turn the brightness up on the laptop to be able to see
I mean, one of the very early things that I wrote down on my notes was, yet again, RTV not very good with with things in the black. There's a lot of popular television these days that appears to be shot almost entirely in the dark.
Yeah.
And you have to go and buy a fancy TV in order to be able to see anything because people are wandering around in these really dark environments and our TV just basically has a black screen and you can't see what's going on. So.
But I have a special app on my laptop that makes the screen darker than the normal brightness will allow.
Oh.
Because I respond badly to very bright screens and I had to switch it off to be able to watch this and turn the brightness quite a way up. Shall we move on to facts?
Sure. I mean, I have...
Gosh, you have many, many, even more facts than normal.
I have many things. So, as per usual, would you like to go first and then I will do far too much stuff afterwards?
Sure. So, I've got down that there were positive critic reviews, but that it bombed at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
When Kiefer Sutherland was first sent the script, he thought that it was a mistake and that it had been intended for his father, Donald.
Which I find doubly amusing in two ways. First of all, because I think he kind of plays his dad a bit in this film.
Yeah, a little bit.
We'll come to his character in a bit. But it's partly that. And partly, though, even though it is very obvious, until I watched this film last night and then read the same thing as you on Wikipedia, it never clicked to me that Donald Sutherland's his father.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, that's so cool.
Okay.
Because Donald Sutherland is awesome.
True. So I also had down that theologian Gerard Loughlin interpreted Dark City as a retelling of Plato's Allegory of the Cave.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, there you go.
Do you want to tell the listeners what Plato's The Cave is? I'm sure you must have done in classics at some point.
Not really. listeners, if you're interested, you can look it up. I'm not going into that right now. We've got far too many of Dave's facts to get through for the runtime.
So it's 1998. So contemporary films are Saving Private Ryan, and one of those instances where Hollywood decides to do two films with basically exactly the same plot, Armageddon and Deep Impact. So this is weirdness. We haven't seen it.
Oh, that was that year.
Yeah. We haven't seen it for a while where Hollywood decides to do two different films with basically the same plot.
Well, we're not paying so much attention to new film releases as we used to. So.
We have said that we see things on the side of buses now, and instead of going, oh yes, we go, what is that? We just don't know what's coming out anymore. But the main thing and the main reason why it and contemporary things didn't make a lot of money was Titanic. So Titanic came out 10 weeks before this and just utterly dominated the box office for a very long time.
It's interesting because
anything else that came out at the same time just did badly in comparison.
I was going to the cinema a lot at that time because it was in the middle of my university years. And I went to see Titanic in the cinema. I went to see Armageddon and Deep Impact and I never heard of this.
Oh, it's interesting. I very deliberately didn't go to see Saving Private Ryan, even though I obviously knew it was on.
Yeah, me too.
But like you, I also went to see Titanic and Armageddon and Deep Impact.
And this would have been exactly the kind of thing that would appeal to most of the people I was hanging out with at the time, so yeah. I'm a bit confused.
Okay. So that was what was on. It was directed by Alex Proyas, who is best known for The Crow.
I could see that.
But also did iRobot, that I hated so much. As of 2022, he is allegedly developing Dark City, the TV series, although how that would work, I've got no idea.
Because there's not really enough story to
exactly
expand. I mean, it was a little bit stretched, even just in a less than 2-hour movie.
I would agree with that. Right, let me briefly talk about who's in the film. We've got Rufus Sewell, who's obviously known for Knight's Tale and The Illusionist, Amazing Grace, Man in the High Castle. But the main thing that we know him from at the moment is The Diplomat on TV.
Oh, yes.
Which is...
He is excellent in that.
Very silly.
Very silly. It's good fun, though.
Yes. But also a link to the podcast, because he co-stars with...
Oh, I can't remember her name.
No, I can't remember her name either.
The protagonist from Felicity, yes. Which we did a couple of episodes ago.
Yes, yes, indeed. We've got William Hurt, Children of a Lesser God, Broadcast News.
Yeah, he was a bit of a surprise for this.
bunch of Marvel films. I've looked him up on Wikipedia, and he has been doing like 3 films a year for the last 20 years, and wow. I hadn't heard of like 80% of them. So enough. He's a busy man. Keith Sutherland, Lost Boys, Young Guns, Three Musketeers.
Yeah, oh, my favourite version of the Three Musketeers.
Designated Survivor, which we watched. But again, his Wikipedia page, mainly known for 24, which I've...
Yeah.
Have you ever watched it, John?
I watched a couple of seasons. My grandmother's budgerigar that I was looking after in my grandparents' house when I was watching that was completely obsessed with Kiefer Sutherland.
Okay.
It learned the theme tune to 24 and would go absolutely bananas every time Kiefer Sutherland came on the screen.
Okay, I've never seen it.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
I mean, if you... No?
No.
No? No. Oh, no podcast for 24.
Sorry. It's an odd part for Kiefer Sutherland, which he obviously thought at the time,
yes,
because he thought it was a mistake and designed for his dad. But I would say it's less of an odd part for him in later years than
possibly
it was at the
we
time.
We will definitely talk about his character, because
yeah,
it's one
definitely
of the most interesting ones that's in it. Jennifer Connelly, Labyrinth.
Oh, Labyrinth.
Apparently Snowpiercer TV series.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the film. I've never watched the TV series.
Something recent called Dark Matter that I'd never heard of. Richard O'Brien, mainly known for Rocky Horror, Crystal Maze, kind of playing the same character he always does.
I wouldn't have recognised him, despite the fact that he is playing a very weird bald man.
Uh-huh.
I still wouldn't have realised that it was him if you hadn't told me beforehand.
Okay. He's wearing a hat most of the time.
True, and there are so many of them.
Well, yes.
That it's difficult for him to maybe stand out, but anyway.
So it's written by Alex Proyas, a guy called Lem Dobbs that I never heard of, but then David S. Goyer, who's become super popular in the industry later on. He wrote the Blade trilogy, he wrote a whole load of Batman stuff, he's written a whole load of Superman stuff, films, and he wrote the Foundation TV series.
Okay.
So he's done lots of stuff. When the film first came out, New Line, which is the production company, asked Proyas to add a voiceover at the start of the film that basically explains everything that is going on.
Okay.
Which was not on the version that we watched.
No.
Because that is the director's cut. But there's a whole bit at the start which is basically trying to understand the human soul. Aliens have kidnapped humans and
really
put them into... Yeah.
Actually doing all the reveal?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a choice.
Because they just like... Otherwise people have no idea what's happening. Proyas says that when putting the film together, he wanted to do tributes to 1940s noir films.
Yeah.
Kafka.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's very Kafka-esque.
And the original Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And also Metropolis, which is...
Yeah, I could see that.
One of my favourite films.
Oh, yeah. So... It's amazing, that film. I'm very glad that you persuaded me to watch that, because it never would have been on my list otherwise. Mm. But it was, yeah, phenomenal.
The film is frequently accused of copying The Matrix. The Matrix came out after it.
Right. Well, it's not... I wouldn't say that it's massively similar, but...
The Matrix came out after it, and to save money, apparently, reused a bunch of its sets.
Okay.
Although I couldn't tell you which ones.
No.
So...
No, because it's not... okay, fair enough.
The character played by Keith Sutherland.
Yes.
Who is a doctor...
Sort of,
with a limp and a
speech impediment
and a thing with his eye and
lazy eye.
Yeah,
and little round spectacles and very kind of German mad scientist,
yes,
hair.
Funny accent, yes.
It, yeah.
He's apparently...
He's kind of like a bundle of very bad stereotypes.
So apparently he is based on a German... very early 20th century judge who had a thing called paranoid psychosis and wrote an autobiography called Memoirs of My Nervous Illness, and that's what he was like.
Okay.
Apparently.
I apologise to him for saying that he is a bundle of terrible stereotypes then.
Yeah. So.
Right.
Very briefly, because I've gone on far too long already, it's got 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got 66% on Metacritic. It did actually bomb, in inverted commas. There was something, I can't remember what it was, but something I was reading about the other day, a film that only made 50% profit. and was accused of being really...
considered a massive failure.
Massive failure. Yeah. Which, you know, if I could come across some kind of investment that had 50% profit, I'd be, you know, reasonably happy.
Whereas, we would measure things differently.
Whereas this one, if you look on Wikipedia, it says budget $27 million, overall global income $27 million.
Yeah, which is less than ideal.
Yeah, but I mean, at least it made its money back. It's not one of these eventually things that didn't make its money back.
Yeah.
But it has become very much a cult classic. So. Okay.
So, there was amazingness and also incredible trauma for me in the first couple of minutes.
Really?
Yep. So, naked Rufus Sewell in the bath. Yay.
So, Rufus Sewell leaps out of the bath because he basically can't remember anything about who he is. And he wanders over to a bathroom mirror and you get a shot for the back. And the man has a nice naked butt, I've got to
he
say.
Does have a nice naked butt, that's true.
Okay.
But then he bursts out of the bathroom and knocks over a bowl with a fish in it, which smashes on the floor. And then there's a close-up of the fish struggling to breathe in the air. And that was horrible for me because I used to have, when we used to own
fish.
I used to have a recurring nightmare where I would get up in the morning and come into the living room and discover that they'd all jumped out of the tank and I had to run around madly trying to pick them all up and put them back in the tank before they died. So that wasn't great. He does save the fish, which is important later.
I mean, it's kind of important later. So
it is referenced later.
It is referenced later. So when I'm watching this film, my first thought, which is obviously what the audience is supposed to think, is what kind of person goes to an effort to save a fish when they can't even remember anything about who they are. And then it's important later on because it turns out that... I mean, do you want to explain what's going on? Or do you want me?
Well, there's... someone is killing prostitutes and mutilating the bodies. And he is under suspicion because when he wakes up in the bath with no memories, there is a dead prostitute in the room. And then he has a scene with a different prostitute who is later then found also dead. So he is, and he is running away from the police rather than trying to sort stuff out with them. So he is the prime suspect. And one of the things is what kind of murderer on the way out from a scene of the crime would stop to save a fish.
Yeah.
Because they find the smashed bowl and then the fish is in the bath.
So we need to explain the main thing about how the film works, because I'm sure it's very confusing at the moment. When you say they came and find the fish, what you mean in that context is the police, which is William Hurt.
Yes, William Hurt is the detective on the case.
Yeah, so he's trying to find out what's going on with the serial killers. When you say that Rufus Sewell's character, John Murdoch, is the suspect. The problem is that Rufus Sewell is not John Murdoch. Now, what we need to do is we need to explain that what the aliens have done is they've kidnapped a whole load of people from Earth. They've built this artificial...
I have questions about that.
They've built this artificial city in space.
Yeah.
We discover later on that the aliens, which are these fantastic, gooey spider creatures that live inside the brains of dead people and animate the corpses.
Okay, well, and that explains one of my questions.
Which was?
Well, because at one point when... because they wander about, they present as men who are very pale and are bald and wander around in trench coats and trilbies, and there are hundreds of them.
And they can fly.
And they can fly, and they can alter reality with their brains.
Yeah.
And yes, at one point, Rufus Sewell is talking to one of them, and he says something about, you know, who are you? And, oh, it's Richard O'Brien, Mr. Hand, says, you've seen what we are, we use your dead as vessels. And I'm like, I didn't understand that, because we hadn't seen that in any way. So I was like, does that mean that everybody in the city is dead and they're using them as vessels in their experiment? Or that's where they get the new people that they bring in every night? Or is it that they themselves are possessing dead bodies?
They're possessing dead bodies.
But they then change them with their mind powers so that they all look the same?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes the child even creepier.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes.
Very, very creepy child.
One of the... They're not really given a name. One of the aliens is a small, bald, very creepy child.
Yeah. But yes, it was confusing. I did feel as if maybe there had been some explanatory scenes that had been cut out at some point
in
the editing.
No, I think very deliberately it's been done. So there were a couple of things which just happen on screen and aren't explained at all. And I thought that was much better in this version than after the voiceover, that when you know
okay.
what was going on.
Well, yes, I
so
suppose...
You need to...
Sorry.
No.
Maybe the voiceover was the I don't know, but the at one point again later right late at the end they're breaking through. So William Hurt and Rufus Sewell are breaking through the wall at the edge of the city, trying to get out. And when they break through, there's just the vacuum of space. And one of the aliens says, "And now you know the truth." And I was like, no. I have no idea what's going on. And I'm doing you, because do we ever find out who was killing the prostitutes?
So let me...
Because I'm thinking about it now, and I don't remember that ever
So let me back up. So the listeners will be very confused at this point. So I need to continue, if it's okay with you, my
go
information.
For it.
So the aliens have built this big city. It just floats in space, away from the sun, because they can't stand the daylight, and so it's always night.
And don't like water either.
Yeah. And they've kidnapped a whole lot of humans, and they've put them in the city. And what happens is, when they've done that, they want to experiment on the humans by giving them different lives that they run through to see how they interact, because they want to understand, air quotes, the human soul.
By injecting them with goo that contains amalgamated memories.
So I'll come to that in just a second. But we're told later on that the aliens, despite all being these separate creatures, only have one consciousness. We have one
that's shared. Okay.
Which doesn't really make sense from the way they're portrayed, but anyway. So they're experimenting because we're told they're dying out and they want to understand individualism. So what they've done is, when they kidnapped all the humans and put them in the city and analysed them all, they extracted their memories into this massive memory bank. And then they got Keith Sullivan's character, who's a... psychoanalyst, psychiatrist, something like that, and said, "You understand about humans. We're going to force you to take little bits of memories from this massive bank that we've put together and inject them into people, so that when they wake up, they have the personality that we want, so that we can see how those different types of personalities interact, so we can understand individualism.
What it makes them do."
And the way they do that is with this funky syringe that you stab into somebody's forehead, and it injects them with memories and overwrites their old personality and gives them a new one.
Yeah.
And at the same time, so at midnight every night, everybody in the city falls asleep. And then they do what's called tune the city, where they have these fantastic special effects where all the buildings get transformed into different things, and the aliens, the tall bald folks with the trench coats, go in and they change people's clothes and they change the stuff that's in their house. And there's a one where there's a couple of like relatively poor people sitting at a meal talking about their day, and at midnight they both fall asleep, and when the aliens come in, they transform the house into this massive mansion, and they give them posh clothes and they change all the food, and when they wake up, because they've injected them in the brain with this stuff, they become different people, so they can experiment what these different people are like. Before the film starts, so actually we see in flashback, that Keith Sutherland's gone to Rufus Sewell's character and he's going to inject him with the memories and personality and make that body become the serial killer.
Right.
But when he goes to do that, it doesn't work for some reason.
He wakes up partway through.
So when Rufus Sewell is wandering around, he is not the person that the aliens think he is, because he hasn't got all of those memories.
He hasn't got any memories.
And that personality. So that character, John Murdoch...
But he was... Oh, no, I was going to say he was that character previously because he's got a wife, but then they put the memories of being his wife into Jennifer Connelly's brain, presumably the same night.
Yes.
Right, okay, I'm catching up. I'm gradually catching up.
Yeah, so she's wondering about thinking that she's married... Well, she
has the memories of
Yeah, she's defined as being the woman who he's married to, and he has no idea who she is.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. So such and such a person, the body, is not necessarily that person, because the people get changed around all the time. And we see this very near the start, where Rufus Sewell wakes up in this hotel, and as he leaves, he's told by the guy behind the counter at the hotel that he's been there for 3 weeks, but he's now paid up, and he either has to pay more money or get out.
Yeah.
And then he sees the same person, in air quotes, sees the same actor later on doing a completely different job.
Yeah, running a newspaper,
newspaper stand.
And when he goes back to the hotel, the manager is a different person.
It's a different person. But the person in the kiosk is obviously a different person. He's been given a set of memories.
Different memories, yeah.
And the person behind the counter in the hotel is the same
memories. Because he recognises John Murdoch.
And talks exactly the same way.
Yeah.
So they've taken the personality from that person and dropped it into another body.
To see whether it makes them different.
Exactly.
Okay. Yep, got you.
Yeah, so that's how it all works.
Gosh. Overcomplicated much?
I mean, not really. I firmly believe that, you know, memory is the only thing that makes us human. It defines what we are. It's why I'm very against hypnotism. Don't mess with your brain.
And why the Reviews Revisited series is so traumatic for me, because I have very firm ideas about what I may or may not have read in the past and whether I liked it or not. And then when I look at my reviews, it turns out that what is in my memory is complete nonsense. And I'm like, well, how can I trust my perception of reality in any way?
Yeah. Shall we very briefly do the plot? Because there's not much of it.
Well, haven't we just spent 20 minutes talking about the plot?
Well, essentially, he wakes up. He's being hunted by the police. He meets up with the person who thinks that she's his wife. He doesn't know who she is. She remembers that he left her recently because she had an affair.
Yeah.
He has no recollection of any of this.
No.
He finds in his pocket that he's got a whole load of press clippings about the serial killing. He can't remember having done this, but he thinks that he might have done.
Yeah, he is worried about it.
So he goes off with a prostitute and then decides.
So he meets up with the prostitute in the diner, and she saves him from being stopped by the police for some reason, and then invites him back to her place. So he does that in order to test whether he wants to kill her.
Yes.
Right, and he doesn't, so then he just leaves.
Yeah.
But then she gets killed anyway. Who kills her?
Okay, so later on, he's wandering around the city, and the aliens realise, through various things, that he's not been properly, what they call, imprinted.
And that he can also do the tuning.
Which is
the shifting of reality with your brain.
Yes, and we don't know anything about that at the start of the film. We know that on a very few occasions early on in the film, he kind of is being chased by somebody, and he kind of looks at a wall, and there's like a sort of wibbly effect, and this door appears.
Yeah.
But we don't really know what's going on there. So they realise that he can tune. They realise that he's special. So they're looking for him. So what they do is they get Keith Sutherland's character, the psychiatrist, to make up the same set of memories that he's supposed to have. He doesn't have them, but he's supposed to have the serial killer memories.
No, they make up the memories of his childhood with the beach and...
Yeah, but it's all of that.
Oh, that's still part of the same...
Yeah.
Okay.
So they make up a duplicate set of what he was supposed to have that he didn't get injected with. And then...
I thought it was the memories of his original person that they took from the world.
No. Definitely.
To find out why that particular person developed these abilities.
Definitely not.
Because he was never injected with the serial killer memories. So why would they think that you having the serial killer memories would give them information?
Let me explain why. So what they do is Richard O'Brien's character gets imprinted with the serial killer memories. And one of the other aliens says, it's not like this guy even has these memories. Why do you think having these memories would let you find him when he's wandering around in the city?
So someone in the film literally asked the question that I just asked you.
Yes.
And I've no memory of this. I'm so confused. Okay, carry on.
And Richard O'Brien says he may not have these memories, but everybody in the city that interacts with him has knows him as this person.
Right.
So if I have these memories, I know everybody that he might interact with.
Oh, so they're doing that to find him, not to try and figure out why. Yes. Because they need to find him so that they can then use his brain to find out what's going on. Okay, got you. Yes. So, I remember. Yeah, I remember now. So Richard O'Brien goes and kills the prostitute?
Yes.
I thought that happened before he got the memories.
No.
Okay.
So I don't know how often they're nicking people from Earth, but...
Well, they're introducing new people every night.
Are they?
Yeah. Well, we only see them do the tuning once, but they do bring new people in.
Yeah, but...
I kind of got the impression that they were doing that every day.
Quite a lot of people.
True.
But what's his name?
Detective Bumstead?
Yeah, but what's the actor's name?
Oh, William Hurt.
Thank you. The William Hurt character.
He's actually called Detective Bumstead.
Okay.
I mean...
Awesome.
What on earth?
A combination of seeing the aliens wandering around in their really creepy ways and talking to Murdoch, and eventually Murdoch demonstrating tuning because he does some telekinesis to demonstrate what's going on and the, this kind of stuff. So he teams up with the person who thinks that she's his wife and Murdoch himself. And as you say, they go to the edge of the city and they try to break out and discover that they're in space.
And there's a certain aspect of wind introduced when they break through into the vacuum of space, but not, in fact, then nobody gets sucked out. And the...
Yeah, huh? William Hurt gets sucked out.
No, he gets thrown out.
Oh, does he? Oh, okay.
But I think there's actually some kind of barrier around the outside of there. But I was a bit confused by that. I was very upset by that, because he just gets sucked out into the vacuum of space and dies horribly.
Yeah.
And he was probably my favourite character.
Yeah, it is very sad.
Poor old Detective Bumstead.
Yeah. Where's it gone? As soon as he turns up, I wrote down, I remember he has a very sad ending.
Oh.
What happens after that is he, Rufus Sewell, is dragged into the belly of the massive machine that sits under the city that tunes everything.
Mm.
And they say, what we're going to do is we're going to inject you with our memories, with the memories of the aliens, so that you'll become one of us, and that way we'll be able to understand individuality and save our species.
Yeah.
And instead, Kiefer Sutherland comes along with an awesome plot twist and injects him with a
set... Injects who?
Rufus Sewell.
Really?
Yeah. And injects Rufus Sewell instead of conjecting him with the alien memories.
Yes.
He injects him with a completely different set of memories. Now, the first thing that I've got to point out is the character that Rufus Sewell has been playing all through to the film at the point where Kiefer Sutherland injects him at the end, that character is gone. That character's been completely erased.
I wouldn't say that's true.
He's been overwritten with the set of memories that Kiefer Sutherland's put together. Now, that set of memories is entirely...
But if that was true, he wouldn't have any memories of Jennifer Connelly.
I don't know. Well, not unless Kiefer Sutherland has put her in the memories that he's made.
Oh, God, okay.
And so he's given this set of memories in which, all the way through his life, Kiefer Sutherland's been popping up over and over again, teaching him how to use this tuning ability and teaching him how to use it to interface with the massive machine that runs the city. Yeah. So that when those memories are fully embedded and he wakes up at the end of that, he is Uber.
Yeah.
And he breaks out, and then he has this amazing fight with the leader of the aliens.
Okay, you say that. The ridiculous climax of the protagonist and antagonist. We will stand on opposite sides of a room and stare at each other. It's really hard.
So good. I mean, there's a bit in...
and kind of waggle our eyebrows a bit and vibrate slightly.
There's a series of animated shorts on YouTube called How I Should Have Ended. And there's one of those is based on the fight between Harry Potter and Voldemort at the end of the series. And they sort of have this thing where they say, "I'm pointing my wand very hard at you right now."
Yes, it's very much like that, only they don't even have any wands.
Yes.
It's just a lot of eyebrow waggling.
But they stand there, and this incredible special effect of you know, telekinesis fighting in the middle, and then they fly around the city, and the buildings are all moving around. And
I don't
and
remember them flying around. Stuff.
Did you even watch this film?
Apparently not. Apparently not. I didn't even... I even watched it on one-time speed all the way. I didn't even speed it up.
Okay.
And I still apparently don't remember anything. So, there you go.
But, so yeah, so they have this epic fight at the end.
Well, certain values of epic, but sure.
It's incredibly epic.
Okay.
And then he beats the aliens. And then through the film, he's been trying to get to a place called...
Shell Beach.
Which... everybody he asks says, "Oh, I remember that place," and he says, "How do you get there?" And of course they don't know, because it's not real. So he then, having won, goes to
he makes the sunrise.
Yeah, he goes to the edge of the city
and he creates a pier.
He creates Shell Beach, and then you see the whole city from a distance floating in space, and he turns the whole city to point towards the sun, so then the sun comes out.
Yeah.
And then he walks out onto the beach, and then Jennifer Connelly, who is a completely different person.
Completely different person.
Because they've imprinted her just before he was fighting the alien at the end. So any memories that she had all through the film have completely gone, and she is an entirely different person that he is now talking to from scratch.
Yeah.
We are left with a situation where we don't know what's going to happen to all the other people in the city because it's suddenly daylight.
He's suddenly going to make it a nicer place to live and be the city god, I guess.
Well, this is the other thing.
Because there's no way for them to send anybody back to Earth, I don't think.
I mean, we don't know. It's because we don't know how it works. But one of the last things I wrote on my notes is, you know, what does a god do now? Because he literally has godlike powers. Mm-hmm. He can do anything. So
very true.
There are many examples of TV shows and films where people are given godlike powers and it rarely ends well.
Yeah.
Because after a while, you know, when people don't do what you want and you have godlike powers, it's not great. Generally, so
okay.
What else do you have?
So I thought the bad guys were a very good amalgamation. Admittedly, all of these things probably came afterwards, but I experienced them before. But that it was like a combination of three of the worst, scariest bad guys in anything ever, because the hats and the pale skin and the trench coats and the gliding reminded me of the gentleman from Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
Very much. The fact that they have gloves and they kind of, like, wander about in pairs, mm-hmm. 2x2 hands of blue.
Yes.
And then one of them gets the top of his head chopped off and a weird jellyfish spider creature crawls out of his brain, and that reminded me of the Weaver from Perdido Street Station.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also incredibly horrifying. So... or maybe is it not the Weaver? No, it's the Handlingers.
Handlingers
from Perdido Street Station. Yeah, so it was like an amalgamation of most horrifying bad guys ever.
It's worth pointing out that I wouldn't say it's a horror film.
No.
So when you say, you know, person gets head chopped off, it's
like a sci-fi noir. That was the only icky bit in it.
It's not really remotely gory. There's a funny bit.
That's why that bit took me so by surprise.
There's a funny bit where the buildings are moving around and one of the bad guys gets caught between two buildings that...
That wasn't funny. That was horrible.
And what's happened is somebody... prop person round the back has obviously just chucked a bunch of jam at one of the walls.
Well, yeah.
It was very silly.
True.
Do you have anything else left?
I don't think so.
So I have a few bits, if that's okay.
Of course.
There's a bit in the middle where they essentially explain all of the plot in about 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
I must have missed that.
So, one of the aliens goes to talk to the doctor when he's in basically a swimming pool, and because he knows the aliens don't like water, so that's where he is to make them stay away. And they have a whole conversation about bringing people from Earth and building the city and implanting memories and stuff. And then the doctor goes off and talks to Mr. Book, who is...
the head bad guy.
Yeah, and then explains the other half of the plot. So it's almost like if you've got to the middle and you haven't really got it, we'll just info dump all this stuff so that at least everybody's in the same place by that point. I was just going to talk a little bit about the, I know we've talked a lot about it being in the dark and stuff, but the visual style is great.
I was going to say it's quite cartoony. It's quite cartoony, especially at the start.
Mm.
It becomes less so, I would say, but it's kind of like hyper-real.
Yeah, it's
very... It's kind of reminded me of The Shadow.
Yeah, yeah.
With the style of the buildings.
Absolutely.
And the way things
yeah,
are
yeah.
shot.
Very much so. It's a really
It's almost like a comic book.
Yeah, it's a really good comparison. I have said or thought several times a lot that I said it's very artificial.
Yes.
And comic book is a very good description of what it's like. It is very like that. But there's not just, you know, the special effects for when they tune the city are fantastic. The way the aliens are made up is really good. The brain parasite, which we only see a couple of times, but it's still really good. The effects of when the memories are implanted is very,
yeah,
very clever, very nicely done. The tuning stuff's great. The actual model of the city that you see from outside,
yeah, that was very impressive.
Is really good. So all the special effects are really good, but what I wanted to talk about briefly is just the way it's shot.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of bits where, in a classic sort of noir kind of way, people are walking into a place that's really dark and your lights are swinging and you get lots of shadows and you get
yep.
lots of interesting light mm-hmm. effects, and the composition of the shots is very 1940s,
yep.
but they do a lot with lighting. It's just very clever. I wanted to make I'll ask you a question.
Go on.
I don't know, I'll make a statement. I was going to say at one point that it felt like poor old William Hurt, he's hardly in it.
Mm.
But I think it feels like everybody's hardly in it. Because
I kind of see what you mean, yeah.
Because the concept and the special effects and all of the stuff is so...
It's quite overpowering.
It's so overpowering that apart from possibly Rufus Sewell...
Who is a non-character.
And Richard O'Brien. It doesn't...
I don't see as a standout at all either.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. But William Hurt, Jennifer Connelly, Keith Sutherland, if you added up all of their actual time on screen, it's actually really, really small.
Yeah, I kind of see what you mean, yeah.
So, it's a weird film.
Everybody spends quite a lot of time on their own as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually.
So that feeds into that.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
There's not that many conversations. There's not that many group scenes.
Very few.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very much driven by the ideas.
The concept.
The
yeah.
concept. And the characters are quite, I don't know, I was going to say incidental, but lesser.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. I'm pretty much done. Do you want to talk about the almost complete lack of diversity?
Well, in terms of the almost complete lack of diversity, I think they're, even taking into consideration the extras and the people that we see in the background, there is one non-white person in it.
I believe so.
And he gets maybe one line. He is the replacement hotel manager.
Yes.
The second time
mm-hmm.
when Rufus Sewell comes back to the hotel, and that's it.
Yep.
And it's not much better for the women, because there are only two named female characters. There's Emma, the wife, whose name doesn't get mentioned until well into the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And there's May, the prostitute that Rufus Sewell meets in the diner and goes back to her house.
Who is killed by Richard O'Brien.
Who is then killed. So the first female character we see is the mutilated corpse of the prostitute in the hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second female character, which is May, the other prostitute, then gets killed. And the only time, it doesn't pass the Bechdel test, because the
mm-hmm.
only
yep.
time that May and Emma are in the same scene, May is already dead.
Yes.
So, not that great.
It's also worth pointing out that the only female character that's in it is effectively dead at the end.
Yes, and
because also... Because Emma's personality has been overwritten with the new personality,
yeah,
and so she's gone.
Also, the entirety of her character is based around her being Murdoch's wife.
Yes.
That's the only
mm-hmm.
characteristics that she has.
Yes.
And the only reason that she's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that Rufus Sewell, with his godlike powers, brought her to the pier at the end because he wanted to meet her again.
Very unclear.
And I found that very problematic.
So when he creates Shell Beach at the end and turns the city into the light and he wanders up to the pier and she's there, although it's not the person he'd been talking to previously, being in a room with somebody else, it's really unclear as to how she's got there.
And whether he knows who she was to him before or not.
Yes. Yep, that's all really unclear.
Yeah. So not great in terms of the representation, because that's apart from a few people in the crowd scenes and the woman who's at dinner with her husband and then gets changed into being the posh rich person. There's basically no women in it, and all of the aliens present as male.
Yeah, I wrote that down, which I thought was interesting choice. I don't know if that's part of the thing about saying that they're all supposed to be the same and they're trying to find individuality.
Yeah,
they wanted to make them as samely as... They wanted to make them as...
Identical as possible.
So, not great. A brief thing on mental health. It's interesting that... I mean, first of all, there's a whole character that we haven't talked about, Walensky, who used to be a cop, but then...
Oh, the other policeman, yeah.
And then, but for some reason...
He's kind of partially seen behind the curtain.
So he doesn't fall asleep one night at midnight, and he sees the city being tuned, and it drives him mad. And then he tries to get out of the city, and he can't work out how to do it.
Yeah.
And so he becomes a kind of classic crazy person. He's in his home drawing lots of spirals and saying you can't get out and stuff, and he knows that his wife isn't really his wife and this kind of stuff. And it's very sad because when presumably Rufus Sewell is talking to him in an underground station, he says, "I found the way out."
No, it's Bumstead.
Is it Bumstead? Oh, I don't remember.
Oh no, you're right. It is Rufus Sewell.
He says, "I found the way out," and then proceeds to chuck himself under a train. Which is very sad, if he, you know, only managed to stay around for a few more hours, he would have
would have been able to go to the beach.
Yeah.
Good point.
But that...
Not a great end for either of the policemen.
No, but my point about mental health wasn't actually about Walensky. It was about the fact that lots of people keep telling Murdoch that he's not going mad. Keith Sutherland says, you're not going mad quite a lot. But Murdoch himself never says...
I feel like I'm losing my mind.
Exactly.
So he just
kind of, you know, goes with the situation all the time and tries to work out what's going on.
That's a very good point.
He never actually says, I think I've gone mad at any point.
Yeah.
Which would have been the most sensible way to explain almost everything that's happened to him.
True.
Yeah. I feel I need to state again that... this film's not nearly as grim as I think we've made it sound.
No, because I watched the trailer, because when we did Stranger Days, I think I was mixing it up with Dark City, so I watched the trailer of Dark City, and then when you told me at the end of that episode that we were going to do Dark City, I was like, oh God, that looked really horrible. And it's actually not.
Yeah.
As I said, there was only just this one thing. Yeah. But I have to say, going back to Strange Days, that's two films in a row that you've picked with young women being horribly killed and mutilated.
That's not an unreasonable point, actually.
What is going on?
I wasn't concerned, but now I am.
Okay. Anyway, shall we move on?
I think that's probably a good idea. So, I guess that wraps it up for this month's discussion. Regular listeners will know that we have a 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. What do you think?
Oh, gosh. I haven't actually thought. Three?
Okay.
I didn't find it difficult to watch. It wasn't a struggle. There were aspects that I enjoyed, but I don't think it's going to be top of my list to watch again.
Okay.
Solid sci-fi, late 90s entry, good cast. You promised me good Kiefer Sutherland hair game, and it did not deliver.
Oh.
That was not good hair.
I neither remember the promise, but also, yes, the hair is not that impressive.
No. How about you?
4.5, I think.
What? Okay. That's a surprise.
When you said you wouldn't rewatch it, I've rewatched it several times. It's easily
thing. What, since last night?
What?
No.
No.
Okay, but I mean,
But I have seen it many times, and I would very happily watch it again.
Okay.
In future, I think the concept is really interesting. I really like the way the city is tuned and rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
I think the cast is really good. I think the visuals and the music are great. I agree that the characterizations are very thin, but it's what you might call a high concept film.
Oh yeah.
And the sort of otherworldly cartooniness of it also kind of appeals as well.
Okay.
So
I'm guessing you still loved it then.
I still loved it. I thought it good. Was great.
It's nice to love good things.
Yeah. Oh.
That's cool. Oh, I'm glad.
Okay. And what is next time?
Well, next time is going to be an exercise in be careful what you wish for.
Oh, dear God.
Because you have mentioned on more than one occasion in recent months that we've been picking things that are quite light or silly or a bit ridiculous in some ways.
Are you going to make me read War and Peace?
No. That would be weird. I am going to make you watch The Woodsman.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Okay. We're going to go so far as I could think to go in the opposite direction.
That is a thing.
That is a thing.
Gosh.
So that is what we're going to do next month. So listeners beware is all I will say.
That is indeed something that we're probably going to have to do a...
Content warnings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, that's it for this month's episode of Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music. And thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
If you have any comments or you'd like to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can always email us at willyoustillloveit@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you.
And remember, you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast with hyphens where the spaces should be.
So please join us next month to find out what Dave thinks of The Woodsman.
Indeed. And whether or not Annie still loves it after our discussion.
Bye for now.
Bye.